I was doing a little math a few days ago. Came to a rather startling realization that it snuck up on me unnoticed. Got to thinking, okay, this is the year 2006. I was ordained to the ministry on the first Sunday in June of 1971. Good Lord, that's 35 years. How did that happen? Well, it's no great mystery, really. One day leads to another, and when you put enough of those days together, they stretch into years, and then 4 years, and 4 years after that, and next thing you know, you're looking at a whole row of years. Be that as it may, I am not quite ready to offer my memoir sermon just yet. I think, at least I hope, I've still got some gas in the tank, and that this journey of ministry still has some more trips around the block yet to go. So rather than offer what I have thus learned thus far in the ministry kind of sermon, I'm going to speak instead for the next few moments about something that largely remains a mystery for me. Something, for whatever I think I may have learned, I've also not quite fully grasped. It's a mystery I refer to quite frequently in our Sunday sermons, in fact, when I say the mystery is that we are connected. Connected, of course, means more than one thing in that phrase. Here I'm taking it to mean the connection or the connections to which Joyce just alluded in our words for reflection, the connections that make a liberal religious community a congregation and that move us beyond simply being an aggregate or a collection of religiously minded or liberal religiously minded individuals. Now, when I say this connection is a mystery to me, as it is, doesn't mean that I'm totally clueless on the matter. I think there are a few things I have managed to figure out about what it means to connect with a religious community, to be one. As I say, that's what I'd like to offer some thoughts on for the next several minutes. Some months ago, our membership committee asked me if I'd be willing to do a sermon on the meaning of membership in a UU congregation. I want to commend that committee, first of all, for the fine work they do. Leadership of Sue Fortier, Joyce Wilt, with the wonderful support of our membership coordinator, Sherry Woolsey. So when they asked me to do this, I decided, since after all I am a decider about these things, somebody's got to do it. I guess somebody had to say it. Decided that on this Sunday, when we very joyfully welcome new members into our midst, and also as another church year kind of draws to a close, we're looking at Ferry Beach and the annual meeting, and then our summer services after that, I figured this might be a good day to take up the subject. So let's start where we were in an earlier part of our service, with the act of joining itself. For those of you who are members, when you were raised in this church or came into it at some point in your life, you made the same choice that these people who stood before you earlier made today. And beyond the process by which we welcome new members, crucial, important as that is, the bigger thing that's happening when it comes to membership is the joining of a couple stories, the joining of two journeys. It's the story and the journey of the person who is doing the joining and then the ongoing journey and story of the congregation and the church. It has been a joy for me over those years to which I alluded, to listen to the stories and the journeys that bring people into a congregation such as this one and like the other two UU congregations I've served. And each one of you have your story in this regard just as I have mine. This, in fact, is one of the things that I see us being as a liberal religious congregation. We are a gathering place of stories and journeys. And a place where each one of those stories, each one of those journeys is celebrated and also respected. Reverend Dave Park, one of our now retired UU ministers, has observed, Unitarian Universalism's greatest strength lies in its conviction that the journey of the human spirit is one that each person must make for him or for herself. We don't prescribe how that journey or where that journey has to go. We do ask that it end with an embracing and begin as well with an embracing of our Unitarian Universalist purposes and principles. And each story that brings someone here is also one that has generated a certain set of needs and hopes and expectations that are seeking some fulfillment. So people come here initially as seekers, seeking, as I say, to fulfill some unmet need, some yet completely and fully realized dimension to their lives that they would like to have happen. And so they are quite rightfully asking, you come here, is there something here for me? If people who seek us out without asking that question, in fact, we most likely take on any new members at all. So there's nothing wrong, and there's indeed a lot that's right about people when they first come here saying, what's in this for me? Like I gotta say, that's exactly what I did myself. When I began to really seriously investigate Unitarian Universalism, once I realized that the denomination that had originally ordained me was no longer working for me, my major question was, is there some way for me to remain in the ministry? Or do I need to go out by myself some other way to make a living? That was pretty basic, isn't it? What is in this for me? And most of the material that our Unitarian Universalist Association offers for congregations who are looking to do some kind of a publicity campaign to attract new people or prospective members does, in one way or another, address that question, because all those outreach kinds of things essentially say, we've got something here for you. All that said, finding that there is something here for you, important and necessary as that is really not what makes for membership in a UU congregation or in any free church congregation over the long haul. And that, I find, is where the mystery comes in. I can tell all kinds of reasons for why people seek out and join a congregation like this one. But the mystery is that deep and enduring membership in a free church congregation actually occurs when, within that person, some kind of a switch gets thrown, some kind of a light bulb comes on, and the realization dawns that what's really going on here is both about me and not about me all at the same time. My story in this gathering place of stories is important. What is equally important is the larger story of this liberal religious institution and all that's gone into bringing it to this present day, to which my story has now been joined. And like I said, just how that awareness, how that shift in consciousness kicks in is something that has always remained kind of mysterious for me. And I know that for some folks that kicking in kind of thing happens. For others, it does not. I just know that meaningful and enduring membership occurs when that mysterious and somewhat mystical connection happens. And a congregation becomes a place where one's name is not simply on the membership rolls, but where one's identity is changed and shaped in such a way that who and what the church or the congregation is becomes an integral part of who and what the person who's taking the membership in it also is. As I say, when the awareness sets in that this is both about me, but it's about something far greater than my individual self as well, that is really the dynamic of membership in a congregation such as this one. So I was being a little facetious a few minutes ago when I said that what brought me to Unitarian Universalism was because I was looking for a place where I could keep my job. That is true, I was. But it's not the whole truth. I also knew it meant becoming part of a faith tradition, part of a faith community, that I needed to internalize so it could become a part of who I am as a person. And you need not be, I hope you know this, you need not be in the professional clergy in order for that to happen. We all have a ministry in which we share here. And that shared ministry grows out of a shared sense of identity, a shared sense of connection. It's a connection to the purposes and the principles and the values that we seek to advance, even as we know our individual journeys of the Spirit have brought us to those purposes, principles, and values in a variety of ways. Well, to take this a little bit further, I'm going to get biblical for the next few moments. I hope you don't worry, it won't hurt. While even my liberal Christian days are behind me, I continue to appreciate some of the universal and very widely applicable themes in many of the parables of Jesus. And that parable of the sower is one that has long stayed with me. Like any good parable, and whoever the teller may be, it's a story that can be very simply told and one that can be very widely applied. So in this one, it's a farmer, a sower of seeds, goes out and scatters some seeds in a field for planting. I assume he's planting grain. He's not putting them in rows right now. He's just kind of throwing them out there. And the way this parable goes, some of them fall on this hard path in the middle of the field, and birds gobble them up, and some fall in the underbrush that kind of surrounds the field where there's thorns and briars, and they get choked off as soon as they spring up. And some fall in areas of the soil that hasn't been quite properly tilled, or maybe there's some rocks right down underneath it, so the soil's pretty shallow, and they spring up and the plants look fine, but since they're not really rooted too well, they soon fade away. And then, of course, in order for this parable to work, the seeds that land in the well-tilled soil get there where they can put down good and sturdy roots and grow and produce healthy plants. Well, Jesus told this story to make a point about what he was calling the kingdom of God. Like I said, any good parable is very widely applicable, so we can take and go with it where we will. It's in the public domain. I don't think there's any kind of a copyright on it. So I'm going to leave out the part about the birds on the path and the thorns and the briars and all that, and just stick with the two types of soil the seeds land on. And while the focus in this parable is on the seeds, I'm kind of interested in that business about the soil. For that's what comes to mind when I think about the meaning of membership and what it takes for membership to flourish. For it speaks to a dual responsibility on both the part of the congregation and on the members who are coming into the congregation. For those of us for whom this liberal religious congregation has become an important part of our lives, our responsibility is to see to it that our soil, so to speak, is such that when new seeds get sown here, they are able to put down roots and grow and flourish. As I said, this has been one of the many joys of ministry for me, to see lives grow and blossom and become transformed as they take root in a congregation. And for those of you, for those of us who've had that experience, our responsibility is to keep that soil tilled in such a way that others can have the same kinds of growing and transforming experiences that we have had. And there are many ways, limited only by our imagination and our creativity, to keep our soil well tilled, conducive to growth. The opportunities we offer for meeting one another, for making connections among us, are a part of that soil. From social activities to discussion exploration groups, to meditation and spirituality groups, to our religious education program, to the choir. All these kinds of things and more make for those mystical connections that in turn make individuals feel they're a part of a shared enterprise in which the whole is indeed greater than the sum of its individual parts. The opportunities we offer for tending to the well-being and the stability of our church and congregation are also part of the soil that makes for growth. I'm thinking here of our various committees and boards and task forces to keep this liberal religious institution of ours healthy and stable. Of equal great importance, the opportunities we offer for extending our principles and our values beyond the realm of the congregation itself through our social justice efforts and our community outreach efforts are yet another part of the component of the soil that we offer makes for growth. And even as we, who've been here for a while, seek to offer these things, I would also urge those who join with us to seek them out. Look for those places within the life of this congregation where you feel you can best grow and find some transformation for yourself. And if you don't see it, if you can't find it right away, or if you have an idea that you feel will make our soil even richer, let us, our lay and professional leaders, know about it. But we want to be as responsive as we can. This is our goal, then, to make our soils inviting and productive of personal and spiritual and communal growth as we can. For those whose membership with us is just getting underway, for those who have been with us, whose membership extends over the years and the decades. We know that as has been the case here, it's the case in practically all religious communities where membership is voluntary. Some memberships are short-lived. Sometimes those roots don't always go down. And we need to know why this is the case, too. Why, in some cases, our soil may not be tilled quite well enough. But our real focus needs to be on keeping that soil as rich and deep as we can make it. I'm going to milk this soil metaphor one more time, and then I promise to let it go. The greater meaning of membership. Sum this up. Harkening back to what I said earlier. Is coming to see whatever flourishes from your own membership as part of a greater garden that's here for greater purposes. That both incorporate and then transcend the needs and the desires of the self. Well, I have one more direction now I want to take on this topic of the meaning of membership before we close up. It also means that you have a place to stand and a place to be from which you can then, in concert with your fellow members, try to live out, try to exemplify what you see as being the beloved community that we wish for, we strive for the greater human family itself. Back up a little bit on this. In the pre- and post-Civil War years in this country, 19th century, there were a good number of what they called utopian communities that kind of sprang up across the country as the country was moving westward, the frontier was open, and all these new possibilities were out there. Many of these were religiously based, others were more secular. But what they were each trying to do in these utopian communities, I kind of got fascinated by them. What they were trying to do was to take their vision of what a perfect human society would look like and then live it out right here on Earth. You had groups like the Shakers, the Amana community, Oneida community, Hutterites, New Harmony community, to name a few. They were out there. They were all over the place. Now, very few, if any, of them lasted. Some of them represented noble causes. Others were a little wacky. And for all this utopian idealism they had, they also discovered that they had to live and deal with the foibles and the failings and the shortcomings of human beings, and they had to face the reality that any human conception of perfection is never going to be realized in this time-bound and sometimes fallen existence of ours. But for all that, there is something in those utopian experiments and efforts that I think is worth paying attention to as we build this community here and consider what membership means. Of course, we're far from being a utopian community, and I don't know on an operational level what that term might even mean. But what we should be, and what we are often, is a place for our members to stand, a place for us to be, wherein we can live out our values of love and kindness and reconciliation, along with what our Unitarian Universalist principles call justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. The idea is to live all that out right here in our midst, live out the vision that we hope for the larger community and world. So we do this not only for ourselves, but in order that we may equip ourselves and envision for ourselves, as I say, the values and hopes we hope to extend, we seek to extend, to our whole larger human family, and to what another of our union principles calls the interdependent web of existence, of which we're all a part. Reverend A. Powell Davies was one of the premier Unitarian, later Unitarian Universalist ministers of the 20th century. He put this quite well in some words he was speaking to new members who were joining his congregation on one occasion. He said to them, "You commit yourself to the importance of an organized religious fellowship. Ideas and ideals must have a vehicle and an embodiment in the world. People who think and work together for the values in which they believe have a better chance of achieving them than people who do not." I want to hold up just five of those words in conclusion here. By those words, and embodiment in the world. That, to me, is the highest meaning of membership. Being a member of a religious community like the one we continue to build here means having a place where we can, both individually and collectively, be an embodiment in the world for the world we envision. Yes, we will stumble and fall at times. And with patience and goodwill, we'll get through those times. For the mystery that keeps us connected will keep our bonds of community strong and growing. And our eyes should always be on the prize of living out and ever seeking ways of becoming a loftier race than e'er the world has ever known. Those words are in our closing hymn. Let's sing that together. Number 138.